there was about 10 seconds of intense page flipping, followed by several seconds of absolute joy.
All of the judges agreed that even if historically opposite-sex marriage was the norm, we had to look at what was appropriate in Canadian culture today.
I think it has to do with defying the status quo.
I don't know if I'm a bottom because it turns me on, or if I'm a bottom because I'm lazy.
It's Margaret Cho.
I am a gay man trapped in a female body, but I'm in it willingly.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Increasing contagion concerns plague Barcelona AIDS Conference, a ringing marriage equality ruling rocks Canada, and notorious CHO wraps up her second concert film. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Dean Elzinga.
And I'm Lucia Chappell.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 13, 2002. The vast majority of HIV-positive young gay and bisexual men in the U.S. are unaware of their status and either ignorant or apathetic about safer sex practices, according to a report presented at the 14th International AIDS Conference. Centers for Disease Control researchers told the participants at the July 7th through 12th gathering in Barcelona that more than three-quarters of the over 5,000 men interviewed for the study did not know they were infected with the virus. Most of those infected men considered themselves to be at low risk, despite engaging in high-risk activities such as unprotected anal intercourse. The findings become even more disturbing when broken down by ethnicity. 90% of infected black men and 70% of infected Latinos were unaware of their HIV-positive status, compared to 60% of the infected white men.
The presenters and others at the conference called for a revival of the passion that fueled the early movement to fight the AIDS pandemic, and some of that passion was on tap during the event. Scores of demonstrators calling for increased funding and decisive action to combat the disease marched outside the hall on the opening day. U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Tommy Thompson was drowned out by ACT UP activists yelling, "Shame, shame, shame," as he tried to address the conference. They accused the U.S. of neglecting people with AIDS at home and of sabotaging efforts to supply low-cost medications to people in developing nations.
There was some optimistic news coming out of the conference, including the prospect of an AIDS vaccine and more effective treatment methods. Speaking at the closing ceremonies, former U.S. President and International AIDS Trust Advisory Board Chair Bill Clinton joined former South African President and Honorary Trust Co-Chair Nelson Mandela in encouraging hope and a new determination to confront the disease. The 15th International AIDS Conference will be held in 2004 in Bangkok, Thailand.
Transsexuals in the UK won a landmark victory for legal recognition from the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg on July 11th. A panel of judges ruled unanimously that the failure to recognize transsexuals' new gender and their right to marry constituted violations of the European Convention on Human Rights. Christine Goodwin had complained that because she was still a man under UK law, she had to pay national insurance contributions until the age of 65, contributions that women only have to pay until the age of 60. Goodwin was joined by an anonymous trans woman who could not register for nursing school because she refused to submit the birth certificate that identified her as male. Their case was the last in a series of similar complaints brought before the Eurocourt in recent years, and the judges criticized the British government for not taking their previous advice regarding the treatment of transsexuals. Despite the court's reiteration since 1986, and most recently in 1998, of the importance of keeping the need for appropriate legal measures under review having regard to scientific and societal developments, they said, nothing has effectively been done by the respondent government. The court's earlier admonitions had already led to the establishment of a working group made up of officials from various government departments, but that group has said that real reform is up to Parliament. Transsexual activists believe the ruling will finally force Parliament to take action.
That same ruling is also expected to have repercussions in Ireland, where a trans woman lost her battle to have her birth certificate changed just 2 days earlier. Dr. Lydia Foy had asked Dublin's High Court to find that the information describing her as male at birth had been incorrectly registered. While sympathetic, Justice Liam McKechnie was not inclined to overrule the country's century-old system of birth registration. Foy intends to appeal to the Irish Supreme Court and will likely use elements of the Eurocourt decision in the Goodwin case to support her cause. Although the Irish court is not obliged to follow that ruling, the probability that Britain will be changing its birth registration system will add to the pressure for reform.
Another legal battle is brewing in the UK, this one involving three gay Zimbabweans seeking asylum. All three had their applications rejected by the Court of Appeal in London on July 9th, with the court ruling that the fact that consensual gay sex is against the law in Zimbabwe does not equal inhuman and degrading treatment or violate the right to privacy. However, the following day, a three-judge panel ordered British immigration officials to review the cases of two of the men. After hearing testimony about the political situation for gays in Zimbabwe and the notorious homophobic remarks of President Robert Mugabe, the panel told the Immigration Appeals Tribunal to reconsider whether the two men would face persecution if they returned home. The third man's case was again rejected because he was not deemed to be a credible witness.
Dubbing it a crackdown on illicit sex and prostitution, the government of Bahrain has sent closure notices to some 500 businesses and is threatening to deport their gay Filipino employees. As many as 2,000 gay migrant workers could be affected by the action of the Islamic island state in the Persian Gulf. Beauty salons, massage parlors, flower and tailoring shops are among the businesses being targeted. Philippine labor and employment officials were surprised by the action, and the Philippine embassy in Bahrain is working to delay any deportations for at least 6 months.
The desire to become a member of the European Union has finally outweighed opposition to age of consent reform in Cyprus. On July 11th, the parliament there approved a compromise measure to make the age of consent 17 for both heterosexuals and homosexuals. Previously, the consent age was 16 and 18, respectively. Equality in age of consent laws is required for EU membership. Spokespeople for the International Lesbian and Gay Association applauded the elimination of the discriminatory age of consent law while urging the EU to monitor the enforcement of the amended law.
A gay Idaho father is appealing the ultimatum of a county magistrate that he either stop living with his partner or lose visitation rights with his children. Theron McGriff has asked the Idaho Supreme Court to examine the ruling of Bonneville County Magistrate Mark Riddock, which would bring the rights of lesbian and gay parents before that state's courts for the first time. The children's mother is arguing that McGriff is not sensitive to the conservative community in which they live. McGriff and his partner recently purchased a home together, but because of the magistrate's ruling, the other man has moved into a mobile home in front of the house.
Pride season continues in cities around the world. Nearly 1,000 people braved the threat of persecution to march in Peru's first gay and lesbian pride parade on July 7th in Lima. The 12th annual commemoration of the Stonewall riots in Köln, Germany, drew 1 million participants and spectators and 150 multicolored floats on July 8th. Professional homophobe Fred Phelps attempted to disrupt Boise, Idaho's Pride Week kickoff, but was rebuffed by more than 200 counter-demonstrators. A handbag and high-heel hurling contest in Dunedin, New Zealand, had a rocky start July 10th when the competing drag queens got into a fight and began using the bags and shoes as weapons against each other. The violence was far more serious in Tampa, Florida, where about a dozen Pride partiers were taunted and attacked. Two gays were beaten, two suspects are in custody, and a third is being sought.
And finally, gay pop singer George Michael says he thinks his life would be in danger if he came back to the U.S. to live, and it's not because of his highly publicized misadventure with an undercover police officer in a Beverly Hills restroom a few years ago. Michael's new video was denounced as anti-American in the New York Post, which headlined the article, "Pop Pervs 9/11 Slur." he described as disastrous an interview with CNN in which he hoped to explain the song he wrote in response to the terrorist attack. Shoot the Dog, which is not being released in the U.S. because Michael has no recording contract in the country, satirizes the response to the attacks and Britain's role in it. The video depicts Prime Minister Tony Blair as a poodle being petted on the White House lawn by President George W. Bush.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 13th, 2002. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by Lucia Chappell and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Dean Elzinga.
And I'm Lucia Chappell.
Our Steve Pride discovers that there's no business like Cho business later in the program.
Love and marriage, love and marriage. Go together like a horse and carriage. This I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other.
In 1999, gay activist Michael Leshner went to Toronto's City Hall to apply for a marriage license, instigating Canada's first legal case in recent history on the issue of same-gender marriage. Instead of denying him the license, the City of Toronto referred the question to the courts, asking for clarification on whether gay and lesbian couples should be allowed to marry. That sent queer and government lawyers, activists, and lobby groups scrambling to prepare their arguments, as more couples quickly joined the list of plaintiffs. Using a strategy from Canadian common law, the queer-affirming Metropolitan Community Church of Toronto came on board by announcing the traditional bans of marriage for two couples and submitting licenses to the Provincial Registrar General. A hearing was held last November, and on July 12th, the plaintiffs went to the Ontario Superior Court for a day as full of expectations as the day they took their vows. This Way Out's Heather Kitching has the story.
Kevin was very confident this morning. I was a little nervous walking into Osgoode Hall. It was very, very troubling knowing that up the stairs to the courthouse lay the answer to the question, are 10 couples in this province going to be second-class families, or are we going to be full citizens?
Joe Varnell and his partner, Kevin Barassa, were married on January 14th of last year in the Metropolitan Community Church of Toronto. On the morning of July 12th of this year, Joe and Kevin found out whether their marriage would be legally recognized.
What happened was the documents were issued. There were 130 of them, and they were waiting with the court registrar here in Ontario. So each of the lawyers went in turn and got their copy of the judgment, and then the lawyer and their particular clique would all sort of cluster. There was about 10 seconds of intense page flipping, followed by several seconds of, you know, just absolute joy, and then there were quite a few tears.
The answer is yes. On July 12th, a three-judge panel of the Ontario Divisional Court issued a unanimous ruling that denying marriage rights to same-sex couples is unconstitutional.
For the first time since we started this, I was actually at a loss for words for a few minutes. All I could think was that we finally had a court here in Canada sending a message around the world that gay and lesbian families do not count less than other families.
Varnell and Barassa are one of 10 couples who are plaintiffs in the case. The other plaintiff is the Metropolitan Community Church of Toronto, who married them. The case hinges primarily on two questions. The first is whether Canada's marriage law violates Canada's constitutional guarantees of freedom from discrimination, including freedom from discrimination based on sexual orientation. If there is discrimination, there's a second question of whether that discrimination serves such a vital purpose in society that it is justified and therefore can be upheld by a court. In this case, the court ruled that there was discrimination and no justification. Attorney Douglas Elliott, who represented the Metropolitan Community Church of Toronto in the case, describes the process of the judges in rejecting justifications that had been put forward by the government and religious opponents.
They considered a couple of things. They considered, can you change the definition of marriage at all, or was it frozen in 1867? And all three of them thoroughly rejected the frozen rights approach. They then turned to the procreation defense. Justice Blair said that although historically that may have been true, and that it is probably still true, that lots of people get married because they do plan to raise children and they think it's a good environment within which to raise children, that there's a lot more to marriage than either sexual intercourse or the raising of children, and that children are raised in unmarried heterosexual households and they're raised in same-sex households, and it's a very, as he put it, narrow and shaky foundation on which to rest marriage or the exclusion of same-sex couples from marriage. And they also looked at the question of whether there was going to be an infringement of the rights of religious people who don't agree with us, or the notion that it was not in keeping with our traditions. And all of the judges agreed that the fact that we had been traditionally excluded from marriage didn't matter because times change and values change. And even if historically opposite-sex marriage was the norm, that really didn't matter because we had to look at what was appropriate in Canadian culture today.
The judges in the case did allow the federal government 2 years to change the marriage law on their own before a court order change would take place. In the meantime, it's likely that the case will be appealed to the Ontario Court of Appeal and then to the Supreme Court of Canada. Without a definitive instruction from the High Court or the federal government, neither the City of Toronto nor the Province of Ontario seem willing to recognize same-sex unions just yet. Nonetheless, the significance of this month's victory is profound. It's the first time a court in Canada has upheld the right of same-sex couples to marry, and Joe Varnell hopes that that momentum will help similar actions in other states and countries.
In particular, the one group we see this as a message for is New Jersey. We're about to launch a marriage challenge in New Jersey as a community, and people see New Jersey and Ontario's judiciary having many similarities. We phoned Lambda Legal Counsel Jennifer Pizer down in California and, you know, expressed our support that we hope this helps go forward in New Jersey. It is not centered in Ontario. It has ramifications for around the world, and it was wonderful to say to our United States brothers and sisters, we hope we've moved you forward a little today so that we can all be treated as full citizens of humanity.
For This Way Out, I'm Heather Kitching in Vancouver.
Try to separate them. It's an illusion. Try, and you will only come to this conclusion, love and marriage.
For more information on Canada's marriage equality struggle, you can visit the website of Joe Varnell and Kevin Bourassa at www.samesexmarriage.ca. Varnell and Bourassa also have a new book, Just Married, Gay Marriage and the Expansion of Human Rights, available through the University of Wisconsin Press.
This is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. For those of us who are already out, stay tuned for the next program.
After her U.S. TV sitcom All American Girl was canceled in 1995, Margaret Cho hit bottom with drugs and alcohol. It was a difficult journey back, chronicled 2 years ago in her hilarious concert film, I'm the One That I Want. America's favorite self-proclaimed fag hag has returned with another critically acclaimed concert film called Notorious C.H.O. This Way Out's Steve Pride chats with Cho about the film, sex, and the fascinating allure of Star Trek.
Comedian Margaret Cho is a warrior on the front line of her own personal sexual revolution and perhaps the funniest person on planet Earth.
Introducing Miss Margaret Cho. She's the Asian ballet girl who's got much to show. She kind of looks like Connie Chum, but in her own slutty way.
I don't know if I'm a bottom because it turns me on, or if I'm a bottom because I'm lazy.
It's Margaret Cho.
Hi, this is Margaret Cho, star of the new summer blockbuster Notorious C.H.O.
Her new film, Notorious C.H.O., is unrated by the MPAA for good reason. And as I gaze into her sweet, innocent face, I can't help but wonder how much of the new film is based on actual events.
people don't understand. It really is all true, especially all of that stuff that people really don't believe is true, like all about the sex club. Sex clubs are great because they have really good food. Not gay sex clubs, straight sex clubs. Gay sex clubs have really bad food. All they have is like hot dogs and Fanta. But for straight sex clubs, they really kind of roll out the red carpet and they do a good job in terms of making a buffet, nice place settings and nice centerpieces. It's really fabulous.
Even a casual chat with Margaret Cho is a sexual education.
Anything you think of has already been fetishized. People fetishize the strangest things. Baked beans are fetishized. Balloons, cartoon characters, stuffed animals. Kirk and Spock are fetishized. There is definitely a connection between S&M, Star Trek, and Renaissance fairs. I notice the same people at all of these events, and it strikes me as very interesting. I think it has to do with fantasy. I think it has to do with the letting go of social mores and convention and defying culture and defying the status quo. I really admire it. I think it's really great. The cross-section that it's most apparent is in Slash. Do you know what Slash is? It's the erotica of Star Trek. This is a huge movement. It's like all over the internet and all over conventions where people get together and they write erotica about Kirk and Spock. And it's all about Kirk and Spock or any other Star Trek television show that is spun off or film. You know, all of them have Slash capability. But the most popular pairing is Kirk and Spock. People do illustrations. They do sort of Tom of Finland-esque illustrations of Kirk and Spock in flagrante delecto or whatever. They're totally this amazing subculture, and I really think it's great.
Although it's not her first choice of entree, women are still on her menu.
I really love a very boyish girl. I love a tomboy. I love a butch lesbian. I think that butchness in women is so sexy, and it's about a woman who is creating her own definition of womanhood, and I find that irresistible. I love boy girls. I think that they're the greatest.
Not really gay or completely straight, Cho isn't comfortable with labels.
They're hard to avoid, especially for someone like me who spent so much time working as an activist on behalf of the gay and lesbian community. When my whole reasoning behind it is that you don't have to necessarily be a member in the clearest definition of the word to want to work for the cause. You know, like I'm so down with gay and lesbian politics. I'm so into queer thinking and queer theory and all of the stuff that I've been indoctrinated with since I was a kid. So it is so much a part of my life, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I always sleep with women. It doesn't necessarily mean that I would identify in the real definition of the word gay. You know, it's just like we can work for what's right just because it's the right thing. It's a movement. It's a whole movement. I think it's really exciting. I mean, we are challenging people's notions of sexuality. It's not just gay, straight, bi, trans. It's an incredible world.
Margaret's humor is liberating, inclusive, and for her, it's always been an instrument for social change.
It is a way to ease people's minds about your message, and it's a way to let people hear you without feeling like you're preaching. You know, it's a good way to be political without being intimidating or boring.
I ask this tireless champion of gay rights if it ever gets old.
I don't think it gets old. I mean, not for me. It's just so interesting because it's so varied. I mean, I'm spending a lot of time now working with gay teens and going to different places and talking to different gay organizations that have, like, kids who are just coming out of the closet, you know, and they're just in college and they're not sure what it's going to be, you know, and they're not sure what to do about it. And I'm out there talking to them and working with them, and it's so rewarding, you know, and it's a totally different experience than anything I've had so far. So things are changing so rapidly anyway. I don't think that I could possibly let it go because this work is so fulfilling.
I've been around gay men my whole life, and I'm so excited that there is so much gay culture in the media now with television shows like Queer as Folk and Sex in the City. It's awesome, because when we were growing up, all we had was Waylon Flowers and Madam.
I hope people laugh. I hope people like it. I hope people feel good. I hope people enjoy themselves. I hope people come away with a strong message about self-reliance and self-esteem. I have a lot of hopes for this film, and some of them are pretty noble. Like, I just want people to feel good and be happy. And others are just like, I just want everybody to like me.
With all her recent fame and success, is Margaret Cho still a fag hag?
Such a fag hag. Will be a fag hag forever, always. I'm devoted. I'm quite a trophy fag hag. You know, if you're like going up there, I mean, the only way you could get higher than me is to go into like really untouchable diva status that only Michael Jackson could get to. Like, we're talking Elizabeth Taylor or Cher even. But of the modern divas, I'm probably the highest up there.
And what does she like best about gay men?
Well, that they're all different, that they're all special, and they're all really important to me in their own way. I am a gay man trapped in a female body, but I'm not trapped. I'm in it willingly.
For more information on Notorious CHO or Margaret Cho, point your internet browser to www.margaretcho.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Introducing Miss Margaret Cho. She's the Asian ballet girl who's got much to show. She kind of looks like Connie Chung, but in her own slutty way.
And if gay men had a period? What do you mean, if?
It's Margaret Cho. It's Margaret Cho. It's Margaret Cho. It's Margaret Cho.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Lucia Chappell, Dean Elzinga, Cindy Friedman, Graham Underhill, Brian Nunes, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambage, Rex Walkner, Heather Kitching, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Frank Sinatra and Skank and Pickle performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To learn how you can help in This Way Out's critical struggle to stay on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KMUN Astoria, Oregon, WOMR Provincetown, Massachusetts, KFAI Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, and on more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody's going to stay tuned.